If you live in Kansas City, you'd have to drive hours to see the nearest waterfall, at least 8 hours to sail one of the Great Lakes. You'd have to go 1,000 miles in any direction to hit the oceans or Gulf. Water as a recreational amenity is an exotic luxury in this middle American enclave, so that must be why we have all these fountains around here. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we dive into the first of three programs exploring how we seek recreational water usage in this part of the country. First up, the fountains of our fair city, from the Plaza Landmark on your postcards to Roselle Court in the Nelson Atkins Museum Complex. Plus, we'll talk about the future of fountain design with a water flow expert who creates massive beauties around the world. Plus, time to dig out your digital camera. We're asking you to get involved in a KCUR photo contest. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Along with the top contenders of jazz and barbecue, Kansas City's numerous fountains are likely to come up in a conversation about what makes our metro distinguishable among the nation and world's urban enclaves. This is Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabulani LaFall. Today we delve into the design and structure of our city's fountains and fountains in general, a conversation we believe will flow nicely, especially with the interactive map we've got now online at kcur.org with all the fountains around the metro area. Throughout the show, you can check out special features on popular fountains around the city at kcur.org. But for now, our guest today is Jocelyn Ball Edson, a landscape architect for KC Parks and Rec, who joins us in the studio. And we'll be joined later by Tom Kuda, the chief scientist and head of research and development at Wet Design, an international water design firm. He'll be joining us shortly from Southern California Public Radio. But first, Jocelyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Now, tell us about your job as a landscape architect.
Well, I'm a landscape architect with the Parks and Recreation Department, and for the last 9 years, I've been fortunate enough, as an old art major from originally, to be able to work on the fountains and monument, especially focused on the conservation and maintenance of our sculptures and some of the fountain operations as well.
What do fountains bring to the character of a city? As far as landscaping, when you're laying it out, when you're looking at it in totality, what do fountains bring?
Well, I think the fountains in Kansas City are a unique sort of defining feature of Kansas City. It's a distinguishing feature. If you think of cities around the world and you want to identify a particular feature that makes them stand out, I think, you know, what would New York City be without Central Park, for instance? And Kansas City's distinguishing feature, one of them, we have several, but one of them is our fountains. And they are sort of a punctuation mark in the beautification of our city. We have our beautiful parks, our beautiful boulevard system, wonderful buildings. We have some great architecture. And our fountains are landmarks and punctuation marks along that path as you travel through the city.
As a Parks and Rec landscape architect, how do you navigate the inclusion of fountains into the city and integrate them into the visual culture of our city? You mentioned that there was punctuations.
Yeah, they're sort of exclamation marks, you know, if you will. The boulevard system was designed starting in the late 1880s, and it was designed with a specific intent to beautify the city, the park system and the boulevard system. And the fountains came along as a kind of accent to that design. They have been embraced by various every generation, really, since then. And I think the development of various aspects of the city in different parts of the city has been really accentuated and highlighted by the embracing of the fountains as our sort of icon.
How's the Parks Department's approach changed or evolved over the years toward the fountains?
Well, it's still a high priority for the Parks Department. It's always been a high priority for the Parks Department. It's a difficult time, of course, I think, with the economy the way it is, and everybody's being hit with that. Our approach right now is to try to just keep everything that we can going as well as we can. And we're not really looking at building new fountains right now, but we are scrambling at all times to try to keep everything running as best we can. And I think in the past, maybe there was a little more certainly there was more funding available and more staffing available for it. But it's still a high priority for the department. And I think our approach is to do as much as we possibly can and maintain them and keep them for future generations.
Now, Jocelyn, there's so many fountains here. Second only to Rome is what you hear in urban lore. They're hard to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard to actually substantiate that claim.
It's
so
very hard.
So given that, how do you inspect or check up on these fountains?
Check up on them all. Well, various methods. Sometimes somebody will call in, and we wouldn't have even been by that fountain today, and they'll call in and say, hey, you know, this thing is not on, or that thing isn't working, or a jet has gone crooked and somebody's been messing with it or something. But for the most part, our parks crews are out and about all over the city, and we have a specific crew for fountains, and there are a couple of other people that also work on fountains through our regular maintenance crews. And certainly everybody in the Parks Department, I think, is attuned, and if anybody's driving around, they see that. Most of the citizens of the city, I think, are also kind of attuned to that, and if they notice something isn't right or something is turned off or broken, a lot of times we'll get a call, and sometimes we've had people even find a part that's broken off or been stolen or fallen off or something and call up and say, hey, I've got this piece of metal over here. Would you like it back?
So Kansas City citizens are very vigilant about their fountains.
You
have like a tips line or something like
we
that?
We should have a tips line. 311 if you have to. It is a wonderful source for us. I think there is a lot of vigilance in that. There's, of course, the other side of that. But I am very proud of people who help us out with that.
What makes Kansas City's fountain architecture and the sheer girth of fountains here, what makes it unique aside from comparisons to Rome?
Well, you do hear that comparison to Rome, and I, of course, can't substantiate that. We don't know how many fountains Rome has. We hardly really know how many fountains we have, considering what could be considered public and what's available to be seen by the public versus something that might be in someone's garden or in a building. For the Parks Department, we have 47 fountains that we are responsible for, and there's a few others that also belong to the city of Kansas City, Missouri. I think the wide variety of styles of fountains is something that's kind of special about them. There's not just one architectural style of fountain. There's not one art style of fountain. We have things that are very Renaissance sort of styles or very impressionistic sculptures. We have great, enormous displays of water, that, like the J.C. Nichols Fountain is probably a lot of people's favorite. And you have very sensitive, quiet, little detailed wall fountains in various places that just have one little stream of water and a beautiful little sculpture. So there's some of them fit right into a wall or a staircase, and some of them are just the grand, big, central display of their own, and everybody can focus on that one thing.
Well, Jocelyn, I think this is an out-and-out, absolute outrage that we cannot substantiate the number of fountains. And what I suggest is an immediate trip to Rome to find out how many fountains they got, and then we'll come back and take
I've been lobbying for that for 9 years. I would love to do that. Let's go.
I'm sure you have. We've been talking about the fountains of our fair city with Jocelyn Ball Edson, a landscape architect for KC Parks and Rec. And now we're going to go to our first feature of the hour. KCUR's Tamika Weatherspoon stopped by the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art to talk with ancient art curator Robert Cohen about what he says is one of the oldest fountains in America.
My name is Robert Cohen. I'm curator of ancient art at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art.
And what are we looking at, Robert?
We are looking at a real old fountain, the oldest fountain in Kansas City, and I bet that it's the oldest fountain in America. It is a Roman period fountain made somewhere between 100 and 200 AD. It's about 1800 years ago, and it came to Kansas City in 1930, 1933.
Some people suggested that it was just a Roman bath, that it was just used for bathing.
Oh, God, there are all these stupid stories that go around. There's a wonderful story that was circulating in the 1950s that it was a bath from Hadrian's villa and that young boys used to bathe in it. But all that is just nonsense. And these stories just become kind of something like folklore out here. But in fact, this was never at Hadrian's villa. and probably came somewhere from the outskirts of Rome. Perhaps it was originally set in a large garden used as a fountain. It may have been in a public building where it was used as a fountain, but for sure not Hadrian's villa, and nothing to do really with a bathtub. There probably was a stream of water that popped right out of the middle of this, filled the basin, and the water streamed over the edge of the basin into a pool of sorts. Would have been a glorious ensemble, and it would have sounded wonderful. And, you know, basically Rome is just like Kansas City in the summer. It's hot, it's dry, and you want something refreshing. And fountains in ancient Rome actually acted something like air conditioners. So you wanted to be really close to them. That's why we have so many fountains in Kansas City, and also why Rome had so many of them.
That was KCUR's Tamika Weatherspoon with ancient art curator Robert Cohen of the Nelson Atkins discussing the Roselli Court Fountain, which he says is one of the oldest fountains in America. And again, Jocelyn, Rome comes up. You're listening to Central Standard at 89.3 KCUR, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm your host, Javelani LaFall. We're talking about the past, present, and future of fountain architecture, and we're joined today by Jocelyn Ball Edson, landscape architect for KC Parks and Recreation. Kansas City, do you have a special memory of what happened at one of our fountains? What's your favorite fountain? We want to hear your stories. We'll even add your picks if you have new fountains, if you found a new fountain, to our interactive map that you can check out right now at kcur.org. But meanwhile, you can also call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or send us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And don't forget, you can also tweet us at KCURCST. We're going to now bring in Tom Kuda, chief scientist at architectural firm Wet Design, joining us now live from the studios of Southern California Public Radio. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Now, Tom, tell us a little bit about what your firm does and how fountains come into play.
Well, we largely build fountains, or water features as we often call them. And one of the things that we do, we try to use water and its appeal as a natural element. I mean, we believe people are naturally attracted to that which is good for them, in the same sense we're attracted to food, and water has that attraction in and of itself. I mean, if people are around water in any form almost, they'll go to it, they'll play in it, they'll swim in it, they'll drink it, they'll splash around in it. And so we take that natural attraction that we have and add to it, you know, a human-created artistic element, and put those two together, and that's sort of the basis of what we do. I mean, that's the driving philosophy of our company, so to speak. So when you look at our fountains, it's very rare. I can only think of one exception where we have something in there other than the water. I mean, the water is always the main show. I mean, that's the thing you see. So we tend not to have statues in the fountain, for example. I mean, that has its place too, and it's great, and there's a long tradition of that that's really beautiful. But on our fountains, the water is the feature. It is the show.
What did your firm's work in Kansas City entail?
Well, we have a number of fountains there, and there's a range of them. I mean, for example, I was just talking about you. If people see water, they'll immediately want to play or splash around in it. There's an example of that at the Crown Center Square Fountain, where you can actually go and sort of run around in the jets, for example. There's other fountains which, you know, one of our signatures are fountains that are choreographed to music, and we have that, for example, at, I believe, at Barney Ellis Plaza Park is that way. So, you know, there's different things. I mean, so some of them, the water in our fountains is always animated. Either it's, you know, choreographed to music, or on its own, it's just doing some sort of interesting pattern. So, and you have that range in Kansas City. So everything from fountains you can kind of run into and play in, fountains where the water is following some sort of interesting geometric pattern, to fountains that are choreographed to music, some of them to the sounds of your own Kansas City orchestra.
What are the logistical and construction concerns that you have to address when you're building a fountain? You're the chief scientist. You're looking at feasibility. How does this all start?
Well, typically we need to be involved in a project very early on because the fountains do require a lot of infrastructure. So, you know, we need to be – and also because from an artistic point of view, we want to fit in with the surrounding area. So, you know, often – I mean, what the public doesn't see when they look at the fountains is what is often quite a massive amount of machinery, typically hidden underground or hidden somewhere else, that's driving it. And so we have to be able to have, you know, access and room to install all of that and then, you know, the ability to maintain it. So there's a lot that needs to go into the planning right from the start. Of course, we need water. We need power. I mean, those are probably more obvious. But the amount of space is sometimes not so obvious. And like I said, we want to be involved very early on so that artistically we fit in with the surrounding and with the ethos of the community that it's going into.
And we're going to bring back in Jocelyn Ball Edson, the landscape architect for the Parks and Recs Department here. Are there any legal considerations or ordinances as far as the amount of water that can flow or the specs on the machinery that Tom is talking about?
Well, there are certainly our building codes related to the machinery, to the electronics, to the plumbing, and, of course, to the vault. Usually the underground space that he's talking about has some building codes involved in occupational space. But there's not really a particular code, I don't think, about how you arrange the water or anything like that. We do have a whole variety of fountains. We do have an ordinance about playing in the fountains. The one he mentioned at Crown Center is one of the ones you are supposed to play in. Most of the rest of ours are not. And so there's some issues with people playing in fountains that sometimes are not designed for that.
What about throwing money into fountains?
He's
ambiguous
the chemist.
Areas, right?
You can address the copper issue. Can you
one of those ambiguous areas,
it's,
right?
It isn't really the best thing for most fountains, but I suppose that Tom can probably address that.
Can you address that, Tom?
Yes, it's not the best thing, and there's a surprising amount of money that's thrown into fountains, and we do collect it, and it's all donated to charity from WET.
That's good.
That's
a good
nice
thing.
Yeah.
We're taking stories from around.
Well, I should have.
Go ahead, Tom.
We collect it from those we can. I suppose there are some privately owned fountains that you know, we don't have that option, but often we do.
They drain it out and take it right up.
I have collected buckets that have been swept up with all of the sand and the grit and the various leaves and things that were left in the bottom of the fountain and taken them and hosed them off and tried to save. But if the pennies or nickels or anything have been in there very long, they can just, they're pretty unintelligible. You can't even tell for sure sometimes that it was a penny.
Right. Well, we're asking area people to chime in on their favorite memories and favorite dimensions of fountains and fountain structures and personal fountain histories here at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. We have Lucy in Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I remember as a small child growing up in the 60s, my cousins and my siblings and I would go with my aunt and we would play in the Meyer Fountain right off of Ward Park, in the middle of Ward Parkway and Meyer. And that was one of our favorite places to play. And my aunt actually took a picture of it and painted it, and it hangs on our wall, a picture of the beautiful fountain with us playing in it. And after we'd play in that, we'd go down the street to the blue water in the flat pool on Ward Parkway, probably at 62nd. Incredible blue water there. I'm not sure how they did that. Mm-hmm. And those were my memories.
Thank you very much, Lucy, for that. Incredible blue water. She doesn't know how they did that. How did they do that, Jocelyn?
Well, that is a fountain dye, and that's a mirror pool, we call that one. It's one of the fountains that has, it doesn't have any sculptural features in it, and it is left to freeze in the winter as an ice rink, so people can actually skate there whenever it does freeze. It's pretty shallow, so it freezes easily. It was just recently restored and re-dyed. And I don't know that it's blue all the time, but there are times where they dye it blue, like several of our fountains.
Tom Kuda, as a chief scientist at the architectural firm and waterworks design firm WET Design, how does that dye work in fountains?
Well, here I'm going to have to tell you, I don't know. We don't dye any of our...
You don't dye any of your water.
No. So I don't know what's being used. We do color the water, but we do that with light. So we have light, lights where we can change the colors of them via a program, and we use that to color the water. And you can see that we can get some very interesting effects, for example, on laminar streams, which I believe you have at the Legends, where we can put the light into a laminar stream of water. It acts like a fiber optic cable, and so you see just that narrow, skinny stream colored, and we can mix those colors and change them as you're viewing it. And we light larger portions of a fountain as well in color or with white light.
That, I imagine, is safer than dye.
Probably.
Probably.
It's something that we do on occasion for several fountains. We usually have dyed them blue for Royals Day and a couple of other times. We're trying to get away from doing it too often because, after a while it gets to be every cause and every event and every time of year somebody wants it dyed, and they end up being dyed too much. But we do have a special dye that's made by a company here locally, and it has so far proven to not be damaging to any of the stone or the sculptures.
We got Matt and Lee Summit. Welcome to Central Standard, Matt.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I lived in the Kansas City area for 12 years now and absolutely love the fountains. And one place I think we might have missed an opportunity would be a beautiful fountain as part of the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. And I wonder if the city would ever consider putting one there.
That's a good question from Matt. You said a couple moments ago, Jocelyn, that there were no current plans of expansion, but just as a conceptual idea.
Certainly as
a
conceptual idea, it would be a great place for one. I think that in the initial construction of that project, there was enough attention being paid to the building and the parking garage and the other facilities around it that was their focus, and they needed to focus their energies and their funding on that. A fountain in the future, who knows? That's not impossible, but it certainly isn't yet planned as far as I know.
Tom Kuda, from a scientific perspective, is there any place that you shouldn't put a fountain?
I don't think there is any place that you shouldn't put a fountain. I mean, the things that would come to mind is something like fountains do, in some sense, use up a certain amount of water. Of course, the water goes up in the atmosphere, and it's not truly lost in the same way as burning oil. But still, in some areas, that would be an issue. I mean, take Australia, for example, where they've been in such a serious drought for so long. But even there, I wouldn't say that you shouldn't put a fountain. I think really the issue is how should you address that water loss? And if it were someplace with a serious drought concern and they wanted to do it, I'm sure we could build a fountain that lost no water whatsoever. So I think it can always be done.
We're talking about the design, history, and presence of fountains in Kansas City and all over the world. And we want you to chime in with your favorite fountain stories and dive into the fluid discussion on this. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Joe in South Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Welcome. Thank you. My favorite fountain is, at least one of them, is Spirit of Freedom Fountain, close to the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Heritage Center. And that fountain has an exciting history. For many years, people all over the city admired our fountains, but there was a time when the African-American community kind of felt it did not have a fountain, and a lot of work and effort went into getting the Spirit of Freedom fountain, which is located along or near Brush Creek and Cleaver Boulevard.
Thank you very much, Joe, for that. That's an interesting point.
It is an interesting point.
Everybody hasn't always been able to enjoy the miraculous breath of fountains.
Well, yeah, I think that, I'm glad that Joe called, because that Spirit of Freedom Fountain is one of my favorites. It's a beautiful fountain, and it is dedicated to Bruce Watkins, who was a leader of the community in Kansas City. And I think it's one of our sort of more modern and abstract pieces of sculpture as well. So it has a lot of importance in our collection, just from the art point of view. And, of course, from the social point of view, it is a beautiful and really important piece of art and a fountain in our collection.
Fountains are also earmarks of history. you could say.
Exactly. They are. They are a kind of gift from the past to the future, and they represent a time and a place, but they also collect the stories throughout time. That, you know, they start with a story. They come from a particular reason they were built, somebody that they represent, an event or a person. And then as they exist through time, they collect our stories, and they still kind of grow with the community.
Our guests today are Jocelyn Ball Edison, the landscape architect for KC Parks and Rec, and Tom Kuda, chief scientist of architectural firm Wet Design, joining us live from Southern California Public Radio. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we continue our discussion, plus we talk with a local artist about mixing the art of the sculpture with the dynamic beauty of water. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We continue our discussion about the design, maintenance, and character of water fountains, a very fluid topic in our city. And our guests joining us for the second half of the hour are Jocelyn Ball Edison, the landscape architect for KC Parks and Rec, and Tom Kuda, chief scientist and architectural firm Wet Design, who joins us from Southern California Public Radio. During the month of May, we'll be having a photo contest, and we want to know, Kansas City, where do you go to be around water in the city? Do you go boating? Do you go fishing? Do you go swimming at a local pool? Do you dive into one of these fountains and dive back out? This is part one of our series on water. Throughout this month, we'll be having that photo contest, and we want to know where you go to get around water. Even if you're not getting wet, where do you go to be around water? Just email your photos to centralstandard@kcur.org. And KCUR staffers and a special committee of water people will determine the winner. And we'll hook the winner up with some KCUR swag, and you'll be a big deal. Your work will be exhibited on this thing called the Internet, which is a huge, huge deal. We have Tom Kuda and Jocelyn Ball Edson, as I mentioned. What are some of the big maintenance challenges for fountains here in Kansas City, Jocelyn?
Well, there's probably my top three, I think, which is the weather, first of all. Freezing, thawing, heat, leaves off the trees in the fall, pollen off the trees in the spring, all of these things can cause trouble with the piping and the pumps and the filters. The water itself, a friend of mine, Paul Benson, was saying the other day at a speech he gave, that the water is really hard on fountains. Water is really bad for fountains, and it's kind of funny, but it's sort of true, too. The water itself is wearing and erosive, and the pounding of it or the chemicals in it are all very hard on it. So there's a lot of issues in just maintaining the pipes and maintaining the pumps and the mechanical systems, like Tom was saying. You have a lot of stuff underground that people don't see, and all of that stuff needs a lot of maintenance.
That's one of the great ironies of this, that water is tough on fountains.
Water is hard.
From a scientific perspective, Tom, what are the biggest causes of fountains going on the fritz? Is it weather, water flow, wear and tear on the concrete or building materials? What is the most common impetus for fountains?
Well, as Jocelyn said, water is pretty tough on mechanical devices. And you know, you add to that, we need to make sure that the water is safe if somebody were to go in it or something like that. So that it typically will have some kind of chemical like you might put in your pool, say chlorine, which it can also be corrosive. And it's going to wear on the mechanics. But in our fountains, too, we have a certain degree, it varies by fountain, of mechanical complexity. So, I mean, there are elements that are robotic. And so just the fact that they're moving around, you know, just like your car, eventually you wear parts out. And so maintenance is an ongoing thing. I mean, none of these fountains are just sort of turned on and left for long periods of time. I mean, you just can't do it. So maintenance is a major thing, and it's part of what somebody has to consider is the cost when they put one in.
Fountains are a very free-flowing topic here in Kansas City, and we have Branya on the line in KC. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. There's a little quiet fountain that I grew up around. And the big fountain, it's on Meyer Boulevard, where the Paseo Boulevard empties out right there in front of the Sertoma headquarters and Dunn Park. And it's almost not noticed because it's just kind of a roundabout intersection. But there's a quiet fountain that sits in the middle, and And there are seats all around it where you can just sit down or sort of quietly approach it. And once you get close to the fountain, you really don't notice the traffic from the Paseo or from Meyer because you're just sort of right out there in the middle, and somehow the traffic just circumvents you enough that you don't notice the research properties or the Nazarene or Sertova or the park. It just gets you centered right enough right there that it just draws you to it. But I think most people don't notice it because you notice the big fountains on Folk Park in Meyer and on Ward Parkway in Meyer, and this one just sits there minding its own little business. But it's been a favorite fountain space of mine for about 40 years.
Thank you, Bronya, for sharing your stories. We have an interactive map of numerous fountains around KC, by the way, and we'd like to collect more since nobody knows the exact number of fountains here or in Rome. So you can write in at centralstandard@kcur.org to let us know where your favorite fountain is, what it looks like. If you want to take a picture, send it in. We have an interactive map up via Google Maps on kcur.org. And Jocelyn, you wanted to add something?
I was just going to mention that caller's fountain is called the American War Mother's Fountain. And we did a large restoration on that fountain just a few years ago. And that's one of my favorites, too, because it is sort of not the great water display that, say, J.C. Nichols or something is. But it is a quiet and beautiful little fountain. It also has a great story, which is something that sometimes gets lost over time and people don't always remember the stories. But that fountain represents the American War Mothers organization, which was formed during World War One and Two, and they were sort of a support organization for mothers of soldiers. And it has on the top of the fountain stars in three colors, which represent soldiers that were serving, soldiers that were wounded, and soldiers that were killed, which is the gold star. And in World War Two, it was something that people did. They had a star in their window, which represented their serviceman or woman in some cases, and what the status of that soldier was. And one of the great tragic stories of the American War Mother's star emblems was the concept that your blue star might change to gold as your son was killed. So it's a very emotional fountain. It's very elegant and small, but it's got a lot of emotional story to it.
And we've been speaking about how the fountains are both landmarks and historical milestones for the histories of people's lives, exactly. Which is one of the reasons we're drawn to them.
Exactly. And I think throughout history, people, like Tom said, people have been drawn to flowing water. It's a critical need, part of our existence. But it's also part of our culture to celebrate that water and to accent it with artwork and to attach our emotional and our memorials and our stories to them.
We're looking for your personal stories at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Michael in Brookside, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello, Javalani. I always listen to your show. It's very interesting. I really like it. I'm glad you're there.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's not exactly a fountain, but 39th and Gillam, where the Parks and Rec building is, right where the ball diamond is, there used to be a large, it's probably 50 foot in diameter, a Maltese cross, and it was a wading pool. I think it started originally as a casting pool, for practicing your fly fishing. But I think only saw maybe one or two people ever use that, and that was in the late 50s. But it's gone now. It's been covered up with this ball diamond. But it was a great wading pool. Oh, the kids just loved it. I mean, it was always filled with kids. And it was such a unique shape, a Maltese cross. Like, I always wanted to see it from the air, like X marks the spot on a map. But, it was just a nice pool, not nice bit of water. I just wanted to mention that, another lost part of Kansas City that it may still be there. They may have just covered it up, which would have been nice, sort of a way of protecting it, I suppose. Well, that's all. I'll just hang up and I'll keep listening, okay?
Thank you very much, Michael. Tom Kuda, chief scientist at architectural firm Wet Design. What qualifies a fountain to be a fountain? What makes a fountain versus a wading pool versus some other sort of structural element of water? What makes a fountain?
It's a good question. I mean, in my mind, obviously, it's going to have water. And I think the water has to be moving to some degree, you know, up above the natural surface it would be lying in. And I think that would tend to distinguish it, say, from a pond or a reflection pool, you know, that kind of thing. So main thing is to do something beautiful with it, whatever you want to call it.
That's a good definition.
That's a great definition.
And I think be able to bring people into a different place, a different frame of mind. I think because we are attracted to water and we're attracted to beauty and art, as one of your callers mentioned, she didn't even notice the street around the fountain when she was at it. And I've seen that at a number of features, both ours and other people's as well. You know, when they're near a fountain, even the sound of the water will take you away from whatever you were previously thinking about. And really you wind up just sort of focusing on the water, its look, its sound, its feel, how it cools the air, everything.
Bruce in KC.
Yes, Javalani, first I'd like to say you have an awesome program, and I listen to it regularly.
Thank you very much.
My question is, one of your guests mentioned that the fountains in Kansas City started in about 1880. And so my question is, how did Kansas City come about getting into fountains and becoming known as the city of fountains? What culture, what started all that?
Well, you mentioned the boulevard structure, Jocelyn. Do you want to chime in on this?
Well, yeah. The original sort of planning for the boulevard system and the park system began in the 1880s. Our first fountain was actually built about 1899, I believe. And that was – there were actually three fountains built that year. And that was the one that we call our oldest fountain is the Women's Leadership Fountain at 9th and Paseo. It used to be called the 9th Street Fountain. And that one also had a major overhaul a few years ago. There was also a fountain built at 15th and Paseo, which is no longer here. And the third one of that year was a small wall fountain up on the west side in Observation Park. And it's a beautiful carved lion that just sits in the wall. And that one was also completely restored, replaced really with a duplicate in 2006, I believe. But the original impetus for fountains came partly from the city beautification plans that were being developed by the Park Board and the Parks Department and George Kessler, and from developers like J.C. Nichols, who brought a lot of fountains from Europe and placed them throughout the plaza and throughout his developments. And then also in the early 1900s, there was a force in the Humane Society to develop fountains as a drinking fountain for horses and dogs. So there's actually several small fountains that were built just for that purpose.
We've been talking about the maintenance, purpose, culture, and memories of our fountains here in Kansas City. You can call in at 816-235-2888 to relay your favorite fountain story. Tom Kuda, chief scientist at architectural firm Wet Design, done a lot of work in Kansas City, joins us from Southern California Public Radio. What can be done, Tom, architecturally as a preemptive measure to prevent high maintenance costs on fountains later? We've learned in this broadcast, for instance, that water is actually the biggest killer of fountains. So what can be done in the early design and scientific stages to...
We have to be very careful about what materials we use. I mean, material selection is probably one of the main things, really. And we do a lot. We have an extensive lab facility, a large chemistry lab and analytic lab where we can test and analyze the steel, for example, that comes in. We can make sure exactly what alloy it is. Same thing with other materials as well, plastics, paint, so on, so that we can best determine, you know, will they hold up in the water. And we also have test chambers and pools at the labs where we can test specimens to see how they're going to hold up. And I think material selection is really one of the main things. Also, design. You know, you want to design something, obviously, so it's not going to break, but also, in addition to that, you want to design it such that when it does start to fail, when it does start to wear out, because besides just, you know, randomly breaking things, just, you know sooner or later parts are going to wear out. You want to make them such that they're as easy as possible to repair. And there's also new technology coming along, too, in some areas where the basic components just last longer, like in electronics and lighting and so on.
And speaking of the design of fountains, we've got a short feature on local artist Tom Corbin, who sculpted the Children's Fountain in North KC, the United Nations Peace Fountain in Independence, and the Firefighters Fountain at 31st and Broadway, to name a few. KCUR's Tamika Weatherspoon recently sat down with him to talk about mixing the art of sculpture with the dynamic beauty of water.
I'm Tom Corbin. I've been a professional sculptor and furniture designer for the last 25 years. In some cases, my sculptures have had water plumb through them. So that's something that you can consider from an engineering standpoint. That provides some problems that you have to consider as far as not only making sure the water comes out of the piece, but you're concerned about maintenance over the time, and you don't want there to be a problem there. In the case of my biggest public installations, generally, I think in all cases, there was no water actually coming out of the sculpture themselves. They were surrounded by the water rather than producing the water themselves. In the case of the firefighters' fountain, it was a kind of an interesting story initially, where there was talk of water coming out of the fireman's hose, but then we realized if it came out with any strength at all, it would be actually be arching over Broadway and probably would not be a good thing during the winter with ice on the road and whatever. So that was the only time when there was talk of actually had water coming through the sculpture. As far as the pieces themselves, they are surrounded by these fountain jets that create a lot of motion and a lot of noise too, which is exciting, you know, and the action of the water and the sound of the water can have a dramatic effect on the feel of the piece and the mood that you're trying to generate.
That was a clip where KCUR's Tamika Weatherspoon talked with artist Tom Corbin about creating sculptures that flow with water. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about the past, present, and future of fountain architecture here in Kansas City. And our guests today are Jocelyn Ball Edson, landscape architect for KC Parks and Rec, and Tom Kuda, chief scientist at architectural firm Wet Design, joining us from Southern California Public Radio. Kansas City, what's your favorite local fountain? Do you have a fountain that's off the beaten path that the rest of the city should know about? Tell us about it. We can add it to our interactive map that's up on kcur.org for purposes of our live radio show. You can call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or send us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll read that on air. Keith in North Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I just wanted to talk a little bit about future fountains. Our neighborhood association is trying to raise funding to get a fountain north of the river. As you probably all know, the overwhelming majority of the fountains, public fountains in Kansas City, are south of the river, and yet we have the largest land mass in the Northland. One fountain that we're trying to get is to celebrate our founding father of Kansas City and put a historical monument fountain at Choteau Trafficway, the new Choteau Parkway, in which we would celebrate Francois Choteau, who had a trading post right below the Choteau Bridge.
Thank you very much for injecting that. What's the role of neighborhood associations in propping up their heroes or proposing fountain erections, so to speak?
Well, there have been a number of fountains that have been installed by neighborhood associations or for neighborhood associations. J.C. Nichols neighborhoods, there were several installed small fountains. Most of them have belonged to the neighborhood associations, and a lot of them are no longer functioning because of the issues with maintenance. So they're just beautiful sculptures in some places. A few neighborhoods have tried to restore some of those fountains. As we've discussed, it's an expensive process, and there's a lot of maintenance involved. So this fountain, though, I think the Choteau idea would be larger than a neighborhood fountain. This was proposed as a pretty large landmark-type fountain. I don't really know the status of that right now. I think it was a proposal. It's an idea. It's out there, and maybe it will get some traction and move on. Or the way, like I said before, the economy right now, we're not really in the business of building new fountains at this time.
Do you see a lot of proposals?
Yes.
Yes. How many on yes. on average?
Oh, I mean a few a year. People love fountains, and there's no fault in that. There is a desire to have more fountains. There's been a long process trying to get a fountain in the 6th district, the south part of the city. Until this redistricting, there was no fountain in the 6th council district. And so there's been a push to do that. And typically what you see is that the fountains are in the older parts of the city when the city was developing in those older, more concentrated parts of the city. And that was part of the development of the city. And, of course, as things have gotten more expanded into the other outreaches of the city and the funding has gotten a little less available, fountains have not been as big a part of those developments.
We have established in this broadcast that people do love fountains. And speaking of loving fountains, Tom Kuda, what's the most magnificent fountain you've seen worldwide and what makes it special to you?
Well, I think I'd have to say the Dubai fountains. As a scientist and engineer, I can't help but be impressed by the mechanical prowess of that feature. I mean, it's a huge feature. It's about 30 acres, tremendous robotic components, terrific water shooters that go over 500 feet into the air. And then great choreography and programming. So I'm not only impressed, by it mechanically, but it's a beautiful piece artistically, and I can't, help but be moved by it. But I'm also moved by much smaller pieces, especially, when I'm standing right there with people and I see how they react to some of our smaller features. People will just come, they'll wait and wait and wait to see a show. They come to certain areas just to see the fountains. And that's always, it's very rewarding to see that as well.
And why do you think people are drawn to fountains? And I'll redirect that question to Jocelyn in just a few moments. Why do you think people are drawn to fountains?
Well, I think it's, as I said earlier, I think it's twofold. I think part of it, we're naturally drawn to water for survival reasons. And we don't need to know that. You don't need to know you're going to the water because it helps you survive. I think things that help you survive just automatically wind up being something that you're attracted to. I mean, food is a good example of that, whereas something like poisons tastes bitter. So we don't have to be consciously thinking, oh, I should go towards water because it's going to let me live. It's just part of what you do. You go towards water because it makes you happy. It makes you feel good. And I think when you add an artistic element on top of that, it just, it brings that out even more. And as I said before, it seems to allow people to kind of forget even their immediate surroundings. I mean, I've been in places where it's a very noisy, very crowded, very bustling environment, which I really don't like that. And I see others there too. And when the fountain goes, boy, it's just, you forget about all of that. And I think it's a combination of things. I think it's appealing to a lot of different senses. It's sight, it's sound, it's the coolness in the air, the way the water feels when a little bit of it splashes on you. So I think it appeals to us on a lot of different levels.
Earlier, you mentioned the Dubai fountains and the choreography of the water. Are programmed choreography components of fountains, is that a trend in fountain design that you're seeing?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you that.
Okay, sure. It's certainly something that we do at WET. We were really one of the originators of that. And, we continue to do it on a number of our features, not all of them. There are other companies out there that do it. I don't know if I saw it so much a trend. I mean, it's more of it than there used to be, but it's difficult to do, and especially to do well. So there isn't, and expensive to maintain too. So it's not something you see a lot, but it's definitely out there and out there more than it once was.
What part does water conservation play as a trend in the design of fountains?
Well, it's very important, and it's an interesting question because I think, I'm hoping in the future it'll start to play more and more of a role in that markets that might not now consider installing a fountain because of water conservation issues might start to think about, well, how could we have a fountain that doesn't violate our water conservation needs and desires? It's something that is always on our mind. We're always researching it at WET, And I think what we need to see is that when people are concerned about it, instead of steering away from a fountain altogether, they come to us or possibly some other water feature company and say, how can we do this and not use up the water, not waste the water? And I'm quite confident it can be done.
That's certainly a concern in places such as California.
It is. And, you know, we have a number of features, though, in California. And, you know, it's really, I think the question is at a larger level. I don't think it's so much whether a city or an establishment should have fountains or not have fountains. I mean, really, it's a question of how much water should that entity be allotted to begin with. And then what they do with it is going to be up to them. I mean, so you could make all kinds of arguments in these directions. I mean, the fountains evaporate a certain amount of water, so do swimming pools, so do lots of other things. So you have to decide how you want to use it and where you want to put it. And one thing I would say for the fountains is, for the amount of water loss from them, the number of people that derive pleasure from them is huge compared to many other uses. And I don't want to criticize other people for what they use the water for, but in terms of number of people, and I'm sure this is true in Kansas City, that, you know, the number of people that get pleasure out of those fountains compared to the amount of water that it uses, if you think about other water uses for recreation, it's a pretty good ratio on water features, I believe. Yes. And I might have mentioned one other thing, if I may.
Go ahead.
Virtually all of Wet's fountains, I can think of only one exception, are in areas where they're free and open to the public. You don't have to pay to get in to see them.
We've been talking about the design and structure of fountains here in Kansas City. Our guests are Jocelyn Ball Edson, landscape architect for KC Parks and Rec, and Tom Kuda, chief scientist of the water feature design firm Wet Design in Southern California. He joins us from Southern California Public Radio. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you,
for
Tom.
Having me.
So thank you for having me. My pleasure.
This has been part one of a series on recreational water usage, and throughout this month, we'll be having a photo contest. We want to know, Kansas City, where do you go to be around water in the city? Show us. Email your photos to us at centralstandard@kcur.org. The winner will be determined by staff and water aficionados at KCUR, and we'll get some KCUR swag and be on something called the Internet. Tune in tomorrow when the movie critics drop in for a chat about the latest Silver Screen Fair. Today's show was produced by Tamika Weatherspoon with help from our regular producer, Andrea Salenzi, and Charlie Upchurch. Central Standard's executive producer is Bill Anderson. Kim Noble is our announcer, and Emily Mutert manages our website at kcur.org. The intro music is by Miles Bounty. The outro is by The Will Knots. Up to Date is next with the blogger behind the blog site, People I Want to Punch in the Throat. That should be interesting. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.